We'll move on then to item 12. No, I'm sorry, item 11. Sorry, Christina. So this is our presentation of travel reimbursement and education tracking process. Clearly, I was trying to skip it because I'm a little bit slow in returning receipts and things that I'm supposed to do. So in any event, I will turn it over to Christina, who's going to make this presentation. The floor is yours. There you are. Felt like I was in
because you already went through all the exciting disability stuff. Now we're going to go through travel.
Yeah, this is the really scintillating stuff here.
Yeah. So we'll put the slides up. Yeah, just click share. There. Perfect. And can you go to the first slide?
We are.
Perfect. So the last time this presentation was done was in February of 2020, which I'm sure we all remember, a lot of things happened after that. So we usually do this presentation every year, but because we didn't have a lot of travel, we are doing it now because travel is starting to pick up as COVID numbers are starting to decrease. So during this, we'd like to talk about the travel expense reimbursement policy as well as the educational policy. So under the travel expense reimbursement policy, it sets the travel guidelines, the reimbursement guidelines for that travel. And for staff, it delegates the CEO the authority to approve any staff travel that they do. And then the next slide, the policy also talks about the board is charged with defraying reasonable expenses of administering the system. So reimbursement for travel expenses should not exceed what is reasonable and necessary for the travel. Next slide. So how a board member is approved for travel. You probably see that travel items appear on the agenda for the board to take action on. The authorization may be granted if the necessary funds are available. And if the program includes subject matter directly related to retirement issues, the retirement association also should benefit from the attendance of the board members going to that conference or travel item. Since the board encourages trustee oversight, the chief investment officer will also reach out to board members to find out what their interest is in observing the due diligence process for our investment managers. And then board members could be included on that travel, which we don't see on the agenda.
And currently, if I can just interrupt you on that point, Christina, currently that practice is that we receive quiet period memoranda that tell us about a pending due diligence matter, correct? Because I'm not aware of any other notifications. I think that's the way it's done.
I believe so. And I don't think Tim Price is here today to confirm, but yeah, I believe he sends out quiet notices on that.
Okay. Go ahead. Thanks.
So then the other policy that intertwines with this travel reimbursement, since a lot of our travel is done for educational purposes, is our educational policy. And there are requirements for the board to receive a certain amount of education. Under the CERL, it requires the board members receive 24 hours of education within the first 2 years of them assuming office, and then every two-year period after that. And that's under Government Code Section 31522.8. This is outlined in our fiduciary education policy. And board members are also required to receive ethics training within 1 year of assuming office and then every 2 years following that. Many of the board members receive that training by going to the SACRS conferences because SACRS provides that training at the conferences. Any newly elected or appointed board members are required to receive sexual harassment prevention training and education under Government Code Sections 53237-53237.5. Each board member must receive the 2 hours within the first 6 months of taking office and then every 2 years thereafter. And SACRS also provides that training at their conferences.
Christina?
Yes.
Going back to due diligence visits, you said that those don't necessarily go on the agenda for approval, or because my understanding is that we do put that on the agenda.
Right.
And if we, I think it's proper to have it on the agenda if time allows, but sometimes something will pop up with like a week or 2 weeks notice and can't get on the agenda. So is that still acceptable to attend those situations and then just have a report back, or what are the rules regarding that?
I believe that falls under the investment policy statement. So it falls outside of the travel policy. And Karen may be able to speak more to that if she's available.
Yeah, I think David is asking, because we had a recent item where Gail and I determined to, because we had time to get it on the agenda, to authorize a due diligence travel for a board member. But David's question is a very good one, which is that may not be required under our travel policy, because that's an investment due diligence observation visit, correct? Is that the distinction I'm getting?
Yes.
Okay.
I can chime in here regarding the travel expense policy that has been approved by the board, that it does require board approval for any and all meetings. It does not have an exception there for meetings or events that come up on short notice, and there's no time to put them on the agenda. So that's not addressed in the policy.
But regarding due diligence visits, is there a distinction?
There is no distinction.
So where does that leave us?
I believe that due diligence meetings or travel do fall within the travel policy and should be placed on the agenda for the board's approval. The travel expense policy does not create an exception from that. I'm not reading an exception to it.
Would that require a board action to amend that policy? Or
yes.
Okay, so in the interim, then it seems to me that the investment team needs to get notice out as soon as possible when something's coming up, so there's adequate time to get it onto the board agenda until the policy can be changed.
And if I could, Mr. Chair, speak to that.
Yes.
There has been a notification provided by the CIO, and that if trustees expressed interest in attending, then that's something that could go on the agenda, like as happened recently. So.
Yeah. So in terms of the current base case, we followed the policy in our previous approval of the due diligence visit, because currently there's no apparent exception based on investment involvement versus trustee education, right? So absent a change in that policy, we'll continue to follow the policy, but that does put the onus on getting more timely notifications, getting timely notifications so that they can be placed on an agenda. I think that's how I would summarize it. Jay, you had your hand up.
Yeah, sorry, just a quick question here then. Are we asking the CIO to basically just put out a schedule of his upcoming in-person due diligence visits?
I don't think we're making a direct ask at this point, because the manner of notification, as I understand it currently, is associated with quiet period notifications, because that's when we learn of a pending due diligence on a particular manager for which the quiet period is invoked. So I think we can consider, Jay, about how, whether and to what extent we want to have different or separate notifications or some other process. But right now, that's the manner in which it occurs.
I'm not advocating for that. I think it would be kind of actually pretty onerous. But Just to be clear, then the CIO can continue doing what he's currently doing now.
Yeah, unless until we changed our policy or course, I think that's the case. I mean, he might, the CIO and or staff might have some different ideas and maybe a different form of notification that they might prefer. I hear you that some of those processes might be onerous, might be ill-advised for whatever reason. So I think that's something we'd want to discuss with the CIO before trying to make any recommendation. That's, at least from my perspective, I clearly we'd want to involve Tim in that discussion.
Makes sense. Thank you.
Yep. Great. Thank you, Jay. Any other questions or comments? No, I don't see anything. So Christina, continue.
Okay. If we can go to next slide. Yeah. So how many board members can be approved to attend a conference? It depends on if the conference is open to the public. If the conference is not open to the public, then the maximum number of board members that can attend is 4. If it is open to the public, then all board members can attend, but should not discuss the SARA business among themselves. And Louie, I see your hands up.
And just quick, that's conferences, aren't events that a manager puts on. Is it still 4, being that's not open to the public?
Yes, it's still okay. 4. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh. So then some examples on this next slide are of conferences that we regularly attend and they're open to the public is the Calipers General Assembly and the SACRS spring and fall conferences. So those conferences are open to the public and we don't have the number of 4 trustees limited to attending those. On the next slide, the board has approved the travel. Now what? So during the board meeting, the administration staff notes which board members have expressed interest in attending each of the items that are presented on that agenda. And then the board members that express that interest will receive an email from my administration staff. And when I say that right now, it's really loose. and so she'll look for the flights and the hotel night stays and any additional information that she needs. Sometimes the conferences have questions that you need to answer ahead of time. She'll get that information from you and then submit it to the conference and book the flights and hotels. She will book all of the flights, hotels, anything she can on a SACRA issued credit card so that you don't have to use your own credit cards for that. All of the registrations are paid for prior to the conference. Transportation, she's looking for the most reasonable and cost-effective rates when she's pulling flights, of course, taking into consideration your schedule. Mileage reimbursement is at the current IRS rate, which is 0.625 right now. Some individuals decide to maybe drive instead of fly, and she'll compare those two costs, and you'll get reimbursed at the lower of those two costs. For lodging, reservations are made at the single occupancy regular rate. Some of the conferences have a discounted rate for that conference, and she'll try to get you into that rate first before paying the higher rate. Any personal items in the room, movies, any toiletries, if you forgot some personal clothing and needed to buy it from the gift shop, anything like that is not reimbursed, and those would need to be paid for by the traveler. Any of the items, as I mentioned before, that can be charged to the SACRA credit card will be charged there, and then we check it to make sure. If there's items on there that we don't reimburse for, we will ask for reimbursement from the traveler, which would be a check paid to SACRA. Meal considerations, the mini bars inside the hotels are not reimbursed because they're usually charged at a very high rate and are not a reasonable expense.
You're talking about the $10 M&Ms on the
system? I am. Yeah, they're very expensive. And you could probably go down to the gift shop and pay only $8.
So true.
So while you're traveling, meals will be reimbursed. And if you have to stay overnight in a hotel, that's reimbursed. But those meals, the tips on them are just reimbursed up to 20%. So if you had really great service and wanted to give them 25, you'd have to pay the $5, but Sicera will pay the 20. The maximum amount reimbursed for all meals in a single day is $100. We don't reimburse for any alcoholic beverages. So if you do decide to get an alcoholic beverage, it's a good idea to ask them to put that on a separate receipt. Other considerations are bridge tolls, porterage, public transportation. All of those are reimbursable items. The parking, any airport transportation, taxis, anything to get from the airport to the conference, from the hotel to the airport, anything like that is reimbursable. Any tips or gratuities are reimbursable, like I mentioned, up to the 20%. You might have tips for maid service or tips to a taxi driver, something like that. The taxi driver we'd be able to see and do 20%. To the maid, of course, that's not really, we're not looking at the 20%. We're looking at more what a reasonable amount is. And it's important to keep all itemized receipts. So we need to see each item that's purchased. We can't just get a total amount. Sometimes when you go to a restaurant, they'll give you an itemized receipt and then kind of like a credit card receipt where it just has the total amount and then it shows that your credit card was run and paid for. We need the itemized one. So try to pick both of them up when you leave the restaurant. So now that the travel's been arranged, Luz will send you a travel itinerary with all of your confirmation numbers. If you're flying and need to check in for a flight, you'll need to do that on your own. Most of the time, we're able to pay for that early check-in so that the airline does that for you. If you're staying at a hotel, make sure to bring some form of identification and a credit card. Even though we hold the room on the Sicera credit card, a lot of times they want to see your own credit card when you show up to the hotel. But you can tell them to charge it to the Sicera credit card, and Luz sends a credit card authorization to the hotel prior to you getting there. So they should have that on hand.
Yeah, I just on that point, Christina, I can't think of a hotel offhand that does not require the presentation of a credit card, as they put it, for incidentals. But I think that is the standing rule, at least in every hotel I've run into in the past 10 years. So I think that's a given. So you have to affirmatively tell them not to leave the charge on your card, or as is normally the case for me, I forget to do that, in which case I need to turn it in with my expense report. So that is the rule in just about every hotel that I know of.
That's exactly what I was just about to say too, is if for some reason they've charged your card, make sure you put that on your travel demand to get reimbursed from us, and right, keep that receipt from the hotel. Any receipt you get from the hotel, even if it's on the Sicera credit card, should also be turned in with your travel demand. Even though it may not appear on your travel demand, it helps back up our credit card receipts. Along with your travel itinerary, you'll also get a continuing education form. So you can fill that form out and send that back to Luz, and Luz will get the log updated. CERL does require us to maintain a record of any education that the board does, and then we put together an annual report that gets posted on our website. So those forms help us know how many hours you attended educational sessions at a conference or event. And we can get that onto the log to ensure that you're reaching those hours each year or each two-year period. And prior to posting that log, we'll send the educational hours out to you so that you can review them and ensure that none of them got missed before we post it to the website. So getting reimbursed, like I mentioned, send all itemized receipts, fill out a travel demand. I checked this morning in Dropbox and put the 22 travel demand in there with the correct rate. So it should be updated in there. But if you need a copy of it and don't want to go to Dropbox, you can always reach out to Luz to get that. You can scan the travel demand and your receipts and email them. You don't necessarily need to drop them off or mail them. And accounting now does have a direct deposit option that you can ask to do if you'd like to have your reimbursement direct deposited into your bank account. If you have a continuing education form for that conference or event, you should go ahead and submit that with the travel demand. And if they provided a certificate, usually we see this with the ethics training or the sexual harassment prevention training. If they happen to give that to you at the event, then you can send that in. With SACRS, a lot of times we get that after the event directly from SACRS, so you don't need to worry about that. Then at the next board meeting, you should report out on the conference or event that you went to. If multiple board members attended the conference, only one of them needs to report out on the educational event. And tips on completing the travel demand. I have Luz here since she's our expert on this travel demand, as I'm sure a lot of you have seen when you get your copies back with her initials on it. So I'm going to let her go through it.
So the form is very user-friendly. I did email everyone the new 2022 travel demand that with the new rate. You just put in your name and it'll populate a vendor number. Accounting has assigned a vendor number for each trustee. Each conference you go to is a separate travel demand. You put in the dates, where you're going to. If you're going to BART, you put BART. If you're going to the airport directly, you put the airport. All educational mileage go on this column right here, because this column is used for when you come back to live meetings. This is where I pay your mileage to the meetings. It's helpful if you put the reason for the travel, which is the conference name, what city it is, and if you have the dates. But if you forget, I'll put it in when I get the travel demand. Then if you pay for your own airfare, it would go right here. Most of the time you guys do book your own flights because you know what your schedule is. A lot of the time some trustees like me to book it, and then they email me with what flights they like, and I book it for them, no problem either way. If you do get charged for the hotel instead of it charging the Sisera credit card, that goes here. This total does not include parking if you drove to the hotel or meals. You would only put what the nightly rate or the total rate for the hotel stay here. If you did a meal, like a room service, that would go in this column where it says meals. If you did park, then that would go in this column where other expenses, and you put hotel parking and the rate. Each meal is posted separately. Say you went to the hotel restaurant and ordered a meal, and then you wanted a soda from the little store in there. Each thing would be in a separate line. This is where you would put the bellhop or maid tips, and we don't expect you to have a receipt because they won't give you a receipt for that. So we'll put it, you can put it on this line here. The Ubers, taxis, shuttles, airport parking, hotel parking go in this column. And then it all adds up, it tallies it up for you. Don't forget to sign it and date it. And then, like Christina said, you could submit it to me via email and I get it faster than the mail, and we can start the process of getting you reimbursed. If you have any questions, now would be the time.
Questions? I'm sorry, Luz. You said we could submit this by email?
Yes.
Okay, I thought you needed an original signature.
That changed.
Okay. Well, yes. That'll make it easier. Thanks.
So when you say an email, so that's an email with all attachments via PDF, correct?
Correct.
All right.
All the receipts, and including your continuing education form, so I can get it onto the log faster.
Yeah, I owe you a few of those too. Yes.
Any other questions?
I would just say that over the years, I've submitted countless of these, and on my bucket list is to submit one that doesn't have to be modified by Luz or the accounting staff. Because I'm not sure I've done one yet.
Yeah, my math is suspect, even when the Excel spreadsheet is totaling most of it, at least on a subtotal basis. So, yes, I've experienced the fine pencil of Luz. Yes. Yes.
Hey, Luz, on the meals, say you have, say, lunch and then dinner on the same day. Do you want us to write lunch next to one and dinner next to one, or just, I usually put it on the receipts.
Yeah, no, as long as you have them in separate columns, each charge, that's okay.
Okay.
You can get carried away with this. At one point, I think I submitted ham and cheese separately on the sandwich order.
That suggests a different problem, Jerry, but I'll leave that alone. Any other questions or comments for Luz or Christina, for that matter, on this? No, I'm not seeing any, so carry on.
Well, that ends the presentation. So,
all right.
If any other questions in general for travel, you can answer those, or?
Just a shout out to Luz for all the hard work for dealing with us and all of our mistakes. Thank you, Luz, and for doing such a great job with the coordination and so forth.
Thank you.
Care and feeding of traveling trustees. Yes. Well done, Luz, as always. So much, much appreciated. And thank you, Christina.
Funny you should mention that, because I asked Luz if care and feeding could be submitted as a CE credit. If she gave a course, she said no.
This goes right under ham and cheese, Jerry.
Let me also say thank you, Luz. And Luz has a email out to trustees that are attending the SECRS upcoming conference. If you would respond to that so that she can get back to our money manager who would like to take those with an interest to dinner. Let me just say thanks for your doing that.
All right. Any other questions or comments on this item?
Jerry needs to put his mayonnaise and mustard in the travel section and not in the meal section.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
Miscellaneous.
Yeah. Miscellaneous.
Miscellaneous. Probably skimmed packets from the Continental Breakfast.
Hey!